The B-movie maniacs often wonder what happens if you're the son of a communist dictator who is worried about the state of the film industry under your repressive regime. The films made are too lifeless, dull, unimaginative. How do you turn things around and show the rest of the world that your entertainment is best entertainment? Well, you kidnap a popular film director from a neighboring country and force him to make movies like the one we review tonight because we watched Pulgasari on
B-Movie Mania!
Oh,
God, that's terribly racist.
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania! And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and crazy Chris Hudson.
Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Hudson. Thank you for joining us today. With me are the usual gang, Jason Hulls up.
Hello.
Oh, boy. Already.
Paul Brooksa?
No.
No, not doing it. Good evening.
And everyone's favorite B-movie maniac, Mike Hayes.
Oh, God.
That sounds terrible. That sounds so bad. But if you've seen the movie, you would understand.
It's probably not just the movie. It's probably just the language of the movie.
Probably. Well, we're talking about Pulgasari, the 1985 North Korean blockbuster.
What does it mean to be a blockbuster in North Korea?
That people have seen it.
Aren't they forced to?
I think
not
they were
anymore.
Forced to.
It's illegal now.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
I want to apologize in advance. I'm on a juice cleanse right now, as you can see.
Well,
so I don't.
Is that a North Korean juice cleanse?
Oh no!
I'm gonna have to get up a couple times to go pee. I'm really sorry.
Oh my
Why
god!
You should just record again in the shitter like you used to.
I did think about it, but it's very echoey in there.
Yeah, that's true.
I hope Pulgasari is not waiting for you in the toilet.
Oh, God. He'll eat all your iron.
So, hey, let's just get all this out of the way while Paul is occupied. And we'll just get right out kind of this movie is really weird, but not as weird as the behind-the-scenes story of this movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So before we all get into that, how about we let's do some quick takes.
Quick takes!
All right, Paul. How about you give us your quick take?
You know, Godzilla has that classic roar whenever you hear him. Pulgasari, is it just me, or did he kind of sound like a constipated cow?
Like a painful scream?
I can't even remember what the sound was.
I guess most cows sound constipated, though, so he sounded like a cow.
Can we play the sound here so I remember what it sounds like?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. All right, Mike.
Do you remember now?
I do remember now, yes. Mike?
I just got to say, roll over Godzilla. There's a new dog in town.
Wow.
That's good.
Jay?
Surprising in a number of ways. We'll get into more later. But it was a surprise. It was surprising. I did not expect certain things that happened in the movie.
That was a very tease of a quick take.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It was a quick of a quick take.
Quick tease.
You can't go quick when you're talking Pulgasari.
No.
Gotta go slow.
This movie plods on and on, like Pulgasari behind his army.
What is the runtime on this, anyway?
135.
Yeah, 95 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It felt like 3 hours.
Yeah, it's a bit of a long hour and a half.
It's a slog.
Right up front, may I introduce a couple of drinking rules that I came up with while watching this?
Drinking rules!
You just need two. There's two drinking rules.
Oh,
one,
God.
Drink every time someone says Pulgasari.
Oh, you will die.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Pulgasaria!
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 And then rule two is take a shot every time Pulgasari changes size.
That's good. And that's real good.
That's either by intent or by looking at it and going, I think he's a different size now, even though he's not supposed to be.
Mike, the only slight tweak I would make to that rule, the first rule, I don't think they actually quite say Pulgasari in the film. They say it kind of differently.
Yeah, Mike.
Well, they switch it up.
Jay, how do they say it?
Pulgasaria!
Pulgasaria!
But they do say Pulgasari too when they're calling for him, when they're shouting. And I don't know Korean, so I don't know what that means. But I think that's kind of an addition to the name, like you might say, like out of respect or out of familiarity or something. They add that to him when they're hollering. I'm not sure. I'm not a doctor.
You really made that up right now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure you did. I'm no expert, but
in Japan, like you might say someone's name, someone's son, which would be like
So in Korea, they say
Well, in this situation, I'm not saying always. I'm saying maybe when they're shouting for someone or whatever reason, they might say that. I don't know,
Mike. I just have to say, in my 2 years in South Korea when I was in army, no one ever put after my name. So either it's not a thing, or they just didn't.
Yeah, there's a reason.
They just
for
didn't
that.
Respect me.
Or perhaps in North Korea.
Oh yeah.
Or maybe they weren't familiar with you. Sorry, keep going. This is a
could
dumb
be
bit.
Could be. Well, that brings me into it, because maybe it's a later thing, because this movie kind of starts out in kind of a like a medieval kind of age. So this is kind of in the same time period you'd see like a samurai or a ninja movie in Japan.
It's feudal Korea.
Feudal Korea.
Like my wife said as soon as this came on, she said it looks like it was made on a flip phone.
Well, it was 1985 and they didn't have quite the film technology they have now.
Well, yeah, I wonder if there is a pretty clean version out there somewhere, because I feel like the Amazon version was
piss poor.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
I believe the only version available is a VHS release that someone in Japan did, and that's what everything else is from, because no one owns the rights to this thing.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So that Sprocket Films, they see the logo at the beginning, they don't actually own the rights to this?
No. I tried looking up who Sprocket Films was, and I found nothing.
Kim Jong-il, I guess, owns them.
Yeah.
Like, all right, Hudson, anyway, what happens in this thing?
Yeah, so, okay, so we start off in a little village, and there's a blacksmith and his family, and I thought it was just going to be a night. I thought this movie was just going to be, like, taking place on a little set.
What's happening?
It's the blacksmith's all working the forge.
They're toiling away.
Twiddling away on their iron
Mike,
hard.
Mike, I hope that's toiling.
Toiling away on their iron hard slabs of metal.
I thought this was going to be like Kung Pao. The audio at first was just so Kung Pao. I really wanted it to be that.
Yeah, although at this point, I really could not wait to see how these blacksmiths glorified the great North Korean worker.
You know, actually, yeah, can I say something about that? This is something that was probably the most surprising aspect of the film for me, is that the government.
I think I know what you're
going to
say, Paul.
Well, can I say it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. What really surprised
me is I just think I know what you're going to say.
Shut up and let me say it.
All right.
This is going to be a long episode, isn't it?
The government in this
film. The soundtrack's really good.
We'll get to the soundtrack later.
Oh. God damn it.
Sorry, Paul. That might
not
have been
what I was
going to
say.
Okay.
All right, Paul.
North Korea, of course, we all know is brutal. It's a horrible place. It's a horrible government. So I was really surprised that the government in this film, in this North Korean film, is portrayed as just a bunch of assholes.
Oh yeah. Oh totally.
Yeah.
I mean,
you would think that they would portray the government as your saviors, as these people that you look up to. So it was really quite the opposite of what I was expecting in that respect.
Yeah, I wrote down that Kim, watching this, would be rooting for the oppressors and hoping that the poor people die.
Right.
Yeah, I did not get any sense that this was at all a propaganda film.
I was no. trying to figure that out myself. I think we all obviously were trying to figure out whose side is what.
Yeah.
But I read a theory that Pulgasari is supposed to represent untethered capitalism. And oh, so yeah. It starts out helping, but then it becomes the enemy of the people and it ruins everything.
That makes the movie sound a lot more exciting than it really is.
The thing about this movie is that, like, it's well made, but not what I expected or necessarily wanted. But they really knew what they were doing, and there are some very impressive elements of the film itself. Yep. I think
we'll get to those set pieces in a little bit, but for now we're stuck in the village, and it goes on for like 25 minutes. It's just slow ass. What's this blacksmith doing? The governor's coming around. There's some bandits in the mountains somewhere.
Well, no, it's the people in the village are the bandits.
Oh,
Indy is the leader of the bandits, and like Uncle finds out the sword's in a bunch of grass, and he's you fucker. Whatever, and then the government comes because the bandits were being bad boys somewhere else.
Right, and the blacksmith is forced to then make weapons for the government to kill the bandits who he is, like, related to.
Yeah.
And just a quick little side note for our listening audience. This film is in Korean. There are no English subtitles, so you're not going to hear too many little audio snippets within this episode. Apologies.
Not to correct you, but there are subtitles, just not dubbing.
Right. Sorry. Yes. That's what I meant to say. Dubbing.
Yeah. I knew what you meant, and I wouldn't have corrected normally, but being an audio medium, I thought I would share.
Right.
And also to correct again, I was really surprised by this. This was my first indication that the movie wasn't going the way, like it would be propaganda, is that why are there bandits? Because the people are starving, and we all know that North Korea has had several problems with famine.
Yeah. There's a real twist in turn of this beginning setup for the movie, because the bandits are there. The government comes because the bandits are doing trouble and make the bandits make weapons for the government to kill the bandits. And in order to make the weapons for the government, the government's making the bandits use all of their like cooking and farming equipment so they could make the weapons to kill the bandits for the government. It's so North Korea. Bonkers.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a decent setup though. I mean, it's a good dramatic setup.
Yeah. And really all the bandits, all the villagers really make instead of weapons, they make a Pulgasari.
Yeah, the uncle, I believe, he refuses, right? Like he gives the garden tools back to the people.
Yeah.
And they hide a bunch of iron and stuff, and then like the government leader guy, he gets mad when they discover this and they cane him because they think he hid all the iron. And he's sentenced to prison with no food. I'm just trying to get to the part where Pulgasari shows up. So
yeah, we gotta get that. This is good. Yeah. So uncle's imprisoned, and then there's like a food fight.
And there's the food fight and the hunger strike and stuff. And but he's on a hunger strike until his daughter comes and throws some rice into his cell.
Yeah, Amy.
Yeah, Amy.
That's her name. She's the main character.
Yeah.
Was she the main character? It jumped around so much.
Well, Indy and Amy are really kind of
Indy
on
and
the
Amy.
Same level.
Right. Yeah.
And then Anna is, second tier there, the son or brother.
So they chuck some rice at the blacksmith in his jail cell, and instead of eating it...
He plays with his food.
He plays with his food. And he makes just the cutest little monster.
Oh, my God.
Fits right in the palm of your hand.
Wait, was that supposed to be made out of rice?
Yes. Yeah.
It was made out of rice.
It was black.
Yeah,
well, Paul, he had to hold the rice together with something.
Oh.
But okay, but here's something that I didn't quite understand. Maybe you guys can help me out a little bit. We see the uncle carefully crafting this cute little Pulgasari in his cell.
Cute.
That is
so
the creation
adorable.
Of Pulgasari, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
The physical creation, not the spiritual creation.
Previously, though, before he gets captured and everything, he mentions Pulgasari. So is it this sort of legend that was already existing and then he decided to actually create it? Or what's the deal?
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a famous legend in Korea, the Pulgasari. Which the creature actually looks nothing like the one in the monster, to be honest.
So it is, it's a real legend.
Just like, how Godzilla is a real legend in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so the real monster has the... There's a couple different descriptions, but the main thing that the thoroughfare for it is it has the body of a bear and the head of an elephant. And these pictures are bonkers.
We should post some. Let's post
we
some.
We will, yeah. Which is not what we get in the movie, and I'll let someone else describe the movie monster. But I, to be honest, I love the movie monster.
Yeah.
Bulbasaur sounds like something out of Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, I hope it is.
Okay, so to continue with the plot here, after the mini Pulgasari is created out of the food and the last of his true heart, he prays for the Pulgasari to help people, and then he dies. Yeah,
but I can't stress enough how cute this little Pulgasari figurine is. I would love one.
Yeah, he's a cute
one,
little guy.
If I could get one.
Oh, especially when he gets that bloodbath.
Yes, I enjoyed the origin of the Pulgasari. Yeah.
So, Jay, why don't you describe the origin of the Pulgasari?
Amy is at home mending a shirt, and she sticks her finger with a needle. And blood gets on the little Pulgasari, and he comes to life. And he starts eating needles.
Oh, it's so good.
Just chowing down on those needles.
It cuts to him. It's a man in, like... there's got to be a couple different rubber suits
because
there are a couple different iterations of this Pulgasari. And so there's a man in a rubber suit in a giant, not drawer, but kind of, right? Like there's a giant pair of scissors near him and a giant. It is amazing.
It's very cool. I like that in the next scene they decide. Well, they love it, for one. And then in the next scene, they cover it up in bed with them.
He's tucked in. He's still so cute. It's
up to his chin. It's up to the little blanket's up to his chin, and he's just snoozing away. But then, and this is maybe my favorite part in the movie, in terms of, like, I wish I was there on the day of filming. He gets out of bed early, crawls up on top of, like, the doorknob, and chews through the metal lock, and eats the lock, and then the door swings open. But all of this is not done with puppets. This is not done with a figurine. It is done with the man in the rubber suit on a giant doorknob with giant locks and a door that actually swings open.
That
it is
door
amazing.
Was huge.
Pretty great.
Oh, my God. So amazing.
He looks like... Well, no one's talked about what he looks like. He looks like a baby Godzilla, effectively. Like, he kind of looks like a cute baby Godzilla.
You can tell he's going to have big horns when he grows up, but now he's got little stubby horns.
He's got little baby horns.
I got to pee. I'll be right back.
Bye-bye, Paul.
Right. Lock yourself out, Paul.
Oh, but what do you think is actually happening in Paul's bathroom?
Pulgasari! That's what I think is happening.
Okay.
Right, sorry, go ahead.
The next day, the siblings find Pulgasari in the forge eating metal. And I think this is the point where they actually put together that it's the Pulgasari.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the legend is that the Pulgasari eats iron. So they know the legend. And so they're like, oh, shoot, that's a Pulgasari. All right.
Yeah. I don't know what they thought it was before that.
I don't know. Just a lot of cool mythical creatures.
Cute little guy.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But I guess this is where they decide that Indy is going to be executed.
Yes.
Is it?
So,
oh, it is.
Yeah, right after this.
They're gonna cut his head off. This is where we get some action out of Pulgasari, too. This is awesome.
As a little tiny Pulgasari. this is definitely a puppet right here.
I'm back.
Paul, what happens next?
Where are we?
Indy's about to get his head chopped off.
Oh, well, this is maybe the best part of the movie, in my opinion.
John Oliver agrees with you, Paul.
Indy is about to get his head chopped off, and Pulgasari comes flying out of nowhere and just takes a giant bite out of the sword is about to chop off Indy's head, and it's great.
But it's great because he's a puppet at this point.
Yeah.
It's so great.
And then someone shoves the puppet into someone else's face, and it's very good.
Yes, he takes a bite out of the guy's face.
That's awesome.
It's so good.
So good.
It's amazing. It is the cutest... Charles Band would give his entire, like, body to make a puppet this cute.
You know, that puppet probably exists somewhere.
It's been a long time.
It may be, yeah, it's probably buried with Kim Jong-il.
Probably. He's probably in the suit.
Well, speaking of that, you guys know who was in the suit, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to get to that.
Well, let's just do it now.
Let's do it now.
Who was it, Chris?
Well, it was... Okay, we haven't gotten too into the making of this movie right now, but let's just say a lot of this movie was made under duress and trickery. And so Kim Jong-il somehow fooled the production team of the 1980s Godzilla movies. And they got the actual guy who played Godzilla in the 80s.
It is fucking Satsuma in that outfit.
What?
Yeah.
No
oh, yeah.
fucking
they
joke.
They tricked the shit out of this the Godzilla team. They thought they were going to do a job in China, and nope, we just landed in North Korea.
But supposedly, there's an interview with him where he talks about it at some like Comic-Con, and like he speaks highly of the movie. He prefers it over the Return of Godzilla movie.
That's fair.
Yeah, well,
that's fair actually.
And he talks about how Kim Jong-il like hid them from people so that they could make the movie and like lavish them with gifts and riches, which is terrible because of the rest of the country was, you know, under crazy duress. Like it's insane. It's fucking Godzilla, literally Godzilla.
But hey, if you're gonna get a guy to play your monster, you go for the best.
Yeah, I think that I'm probably the biggest kaiju fan in the group here. I think that's fair to say. Yeah,
probably. Yep. Yeah.
And I didn't know that, Mike. So that's pretty interesting. But he's right. Pulgasari is better than the 1984 Godzilla.
Pulgasaria. Pulgasaria.
I think here's where we really get the first shot of Pulgasari as the man of the suit, right after the execution scene, because he's just chowing down on all the weapons in the village.
And, yeah, all the iron.
The government soldiers are trying to, like, they're like, they don't know what's going on. They try to stab him, and he just the swords break over him, the arrows, spears are breaking off of his skin.
And he doesn't give a shit. He's just walking around.
They just bust through a wall.
So the Pulgasari leaves the town, and the siblings, they're calling out for Pulgasari, and they find him in the wilderness and in a creek, and he's playing with minnows, and they go down near him, and it looks like he splashes them and wants to play in the creek, but then he just takes them garden tools and walks into the woods.
His like, what do you call it? Awareness of humans and interaction with humans is the best fucking thing. This is why I think this movie's better than any Godzilla movie. It is so
good. I'm not aware of any kaiju movie. I'm a pretty big fan, like I said.
Sure.
But I don't know of any other movie who has used this concept so well, where you start with a monster that's just a little tiny thing, and
so
then he
cute.
Gradually keeps growing. It's actually really cool, the concept of it.
Yeah,
because he leaves this town, and he is about human-sized when they go to, like, find him. He's about their size.
When he's playing with the minnows.
Yes.
Well, and this is about the point where we're about 35 minutes into it, and I noted that I could actually use a little more Pulgasari in the movie at this
point. That's pretty common, though, also, with a lot of kaiju movies. You don't see him for a while.
Now, we introduce here also the next guy up the food chain. He was the king, right?
The king, yeah. So
the guy with the awesome hat?
Yeah. So the governor dies in the attack, and then we get to the king. He's all angry, and who will fight this Pulgasari?
Mm-hmm. And he loses the first battle at the mountain, right?
They're gonna
go to the rebels, and they're gonna surround it and wait for the rebels to starve.
Yeah, this is probably my favorite part.
Yeah, one of the rebels offers to sneak out and get food.
Oh wait, no! Before this, we've got the scene where they're just chucking logs at the army.
Yeah,
logs and rocks.
What a log chucking!
And goddamn logs, logs. There are it's a fucking lot of logs. They're just coming down, and there's no way no one died making this movie. Because they're dropping logs.
Not.
They're dropping logs on
like
people.
Paul Brooks.
Oh my god.
They were log jamming.
Log jamming.
But then they the government eventually captures Amy, and then Pulgasari goes to save her and gets her out. And then you see Pulgasari running. They show these scenes where the farmers are charging with a group, you know, all together, like you see. And there's this first scene you see him in battle. He's about the size of a human, and he is like prancing along in that fucking suit with everyone else. It is so fucking good.
Yeah, he's at the head of the charge. And they keep feeding it weapons, right? Like, so he keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Because after that scene, it cuts to another scene, and he is giant.
Yes, he goes from man size to full-blown kaiju size pretty quick,
basically in a montage.
One thing I did like too, which makes sense now that we're talking about it, the villains somehow knew the origin story of Pulgasari and that it followed Amy's commands, So that's why they conspire to kidnap her. But if he's a, if Paul Gasari's a legend, that might make sense that they go, oh, this is a Paul Gasari, we kind of know, so...
That makes some sense to me, but I didn't really understand how they connected the fact that Amy was giving him the commands.
They were spying on him a lot and stuff, or maybe they know... Because he saves her like two or three times in the movie, doesn't he?
Or
like,
maybe our villains are just that goddamn smart.
Could be.
All their plans were really brilliant. They were so brilliant and totally worked every single time.
Well, what was that first plan?
The first one was to capture Amy, and they forced Paul Gasari to get into a giant cage.
I love this part.
The biggest goddamn cage in the history of mankind, which they somehow had to have built in like under 24 hours, and it's like way taller than Paul Gasari is, and Paul Gasari is very tall.
Paul, it sounds like you doubt the devotion of the North Korean worker.
The workforce in North Korea yes. is amazing.
I love it. They hold a sword to Amy's throat and they make Paul Gasari get in the cage.
Like he's a dog, just like get, yeah, get in there.
So he does though, and he gets in the cage. They set it on fire, and I just like I'm like this is who, the guy who played Godzilla in that suit. That was not safe working conditions for him.
No.
Everything is on fire around.
I don't care what the force perspective on that was. Like he was near too much fire.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I thought that was actually kind of a sad scene. I was feeling for Paul Gasari.
Yeah, it was
right
a real Iron Giant situation, I thought.
Yeah. But no, I love this part next, because when he bursts out of the burning wreckage, now he's not only huge, he's also burning hot red and pissed off.
Yeah. Because he's like apparently made of iron, maybe, or something. Now?
I think he's supposed to be made of iron.
Yeah.
Because he was hot for like hours after that too. Like however length of time it was, he was still hot to the touch, as we saw.
So what does he do when he gets pissed off?
Dude, he jumps in the river and makes it boil, so he cooks all the soldiers.
Yeah, he does. Oh,
it's so cool.
You've got soldier soup coming up, baby.
You think Paul Gasari only has one tactic for beating an army? No.
No.
Oh, my God.
He will
God.
Cook your army.
So that plan backfired pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I see what you did. Fired. That's good.
Paul Gasari is always down to help the army. And I have to say, I love the scenes where the army's marching. Because you get the foreground, there's all these people just walking. And then in the background, it's just Paul Gasari from the waist up, just cruising along behind them.
It's so fucking good.
It does not look good.
It looks so good, Paul. Shut your fucking mouth. It's amazing. It's so good. Oh, I was so tickled every time those shots showed up. I was just so excited.
I love they happened so many times.
I had a question for you, Mike, that I wanted to make sure I asked you tonight.
Uh-huh.
Who would you take in a fight? Oh. Paul Gasari or young Gary?
Oh, fuck. Like, who would I take on my team or against? What do you mean?
Who would win in a fight between
the two?
Paul Gasari and young Gary.
Oh, Paul Gasari.
You think so?
No, Paul Gasari's got those sweet-ass horns.
Me and Mike used to do a show called Drunk Movie Reviews, and the very first episode was a review of a South Korean monster movie called Reptilian, and the name of the monster was Young Gary. So they got a little bit of a North Korea-South Korea rivalry going on.
I mean, Young Gary had some sweet-ass abs. I mean, don't get me wrong.
And he had that sweet monocle.
Bored. But I think what would happen, he did have that sweet monocle, but I do think that Paul Gasari would use those washboard abs in the boiling hot river to clean up some government soldiers. You just rub them
you're,
up
you're
on
probably,
that.
You're probably right.
And then they might kiss.
Yeah, kind of a unification of North and South Korea.
Let's talk about the next plan that they'd come up with God. to stop Paul Gasari.
I want to talk about the slash mic about Young Gary and Paul Gasari.
Oh, God.
After we talk about the pit, Mike.
Okay.
So the next plan is to dig a big fucking pit in, what, 20 minutes?
Yeah, well,
yes.
Because that army is on
Chris,
the move.
Chris, it sounds like you're doubting the dedication of the North Korean worker.
Well, I'd like to point out how urgent and quickly they had to do it, because the farmers decided to attack the government, like, not wait. They were like, we got Paul Gasari, let's just go. Let's fucking take these government fuckers on. And so the government sees that they're coming, and they're like, all right, let's build a pit.
And Chris, they shoot, I have a question for you. They shoot like these rocket spears at Paul Gasari.
Yeah.
And yeah. most of the time, they don't have an effect. One does hit him in the eye, and that kind of gets him.
Right in the eye.
Was that the early version of the Law Rocket, Chris? You were in Army. Can you... And you were in Korea. Can you talk about that?
I believe so, yeah. It was an early form of rocketry, I guess.
So if you were in the North Korean Army, you might have been one of those guys.
I probably would have been, yeah. I mean... I was air defense in the modern day army, but in ancient North Korea army, I would have been kaiju defense.
Hmm, interesting.
No question about it.
Hey, Chris, when you were in South Korea, how much talk did you hear about the Pulgasari-Yeongeri rivalry? Was that something that people talked about a lot?
You know, I didn't really hear that much about it. I mean, I was there a few years after Pulgasari was made, but I don't... When was Yeongeri? Was that a more recent thing?
I think it's also a historical event. I mean, was it a rivalry, or maybe you heard more about a romance between the two?
That's what they didn't want us to talk about at all.
Were they a hot couple?
To keep that. They were a hot couple that you were a little jealous of, but couldn't really talk about because it was forbidden.
I bet they had one of those combined names like Yeongasari or something like that, and they're on all the yes, periodicals. Nice.
I think Pulgari.
Oh, Pulgari's really good too.
If you guys want to watch Mike's review of Reptilian, the Yeongeri movie, or as Mike likes to call him, Gay Guy.
Hey, now.
That's what you called him.
I know.
We'll post a link down below.
God damn it.
Anyway, suffice to say, though, they dig that hole really fast.
Yeah, and it's a huge fucking hole.
And not just that. I mean, the pit really isn't the astonishing part. The astonishing part is that when Pulgasari shows up, he falls into the pit.
Yeah,
and then is bombarded with 60 million rocks.
Wait, can we step it back for a second? Paul, I want to talk about these rocks real bad, but there's a reason he fell into the pit, which we cannot gloss over.
All right.
Do you not recall the government hiring a witch to exorcise Pulgasari?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, gods. Yeah, that's a thing.
Someone knew that that hole wasn't going to be enough.
Like, and the hole is not a hole. It's a fucking canyon. It is monstrous.
There's a lot of dancing in this movie, too. Surprising amount of dancing.
Yeah, it's a joyous country. It's a joyous people. But yeah, so she, like, it works. The exorcism works on him, sort of. And enough to make him fall into this pit. And then, Paul... Then let's talk about the loud as fuck 40 seconds of uninterrupted smashing rock sound. I timed it. It's 40 fucking seconds.
Yeah, they're just like, he's in the pit, go! And they release gigantic mountain boulders that are somehow careening down into this pit.
Oh, it's insane. Note, don't play the sound of the rocks because it's fucking awful.
I was just going to say, should I play all 40 seconds
of the
rocks?
Maybe
the
if
rocks.
You can, but real quiet.
Underneath in the background.
Yeah, just 40 seconds in the background.
I'll put it underneath Lloyd's outro as he's talking about our Facebook.
There you go. That's perfect.
So I think at this point, the movie just... cuts again, and we see everyone back, all the bandits back in their base, back in their camp.
Well, this is the part, this was a kind of a shocking moment,
yes.
actually,
yes.
because Indy gets captured again,
yeah,
and they're going to execute him by hanging him this time.
But don't worry, Pulgasari is going to get him.
Nope.
Nope.
What do you
nope.
mean? Wait, whoa, what do you mean?
Indy dies.
No.
Indy dies. I'm sorry, Mike.
Indy!
That was genuinely like, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was one of the main guys, and he bites it.
Then the credits roll, end of the movie.
No, this is when the general throws a party.
Yeah. Amy dresses up like a prosty.
Why would they send such a beautiful woman to bring us booze?
So Amy, she sneaks into the party in a... attempt to find what happened to Pulgasari, I guess.
This scene is so badass.
Yeah.
So the advisor or something recognizes her and...
Yes, and then she gets over the burial and she cuts herself.
Well, they're like threatening her, and she goes, stand back, or I'll do it. Like pulls his knife out, and like she's gonna cut herself. Like I didn't get it at first. I was like, wait a minute, what does that even mean? She's gonna kill herself for them? I don't know. And then she cuts her arm like fucking hardcore, and then bleeds onto the rocks, and the rocks start just a bubbling.
Guess he's about to crash the party.
Yep, glowing lights come out.
Man, Pulgasari jumps out, like explodes out of these rocks, and lands on the ground. And it is one of the coolest shots in cinematic history. Like the when he lands back down and it's juxtaposed against like this temple building on the right, and he's down, he lands down on the left, and it's like real dark and blue. It's fucking dope as shit.
When Pulgasari smashes the sets in this movie, it looks really cool. I mean, they built these big castles for Pulgasari to walk
through. It's insane.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say before he goes to where the king lives, we've got one more battle.
Mm-hmm, yep.
With the new super secret weapons that some sort of artisan has been working on.
You mean Lion Gun and General Gun?
Lion Gun and General Gun.
I was confused because they said, hey, we got some guy making a secret weapon. It's a giant iron cylinder filled with explosives. And I thought, ooh, they made a special sneaky treat for Pulgasari. They got this big, long piece of iron. They're going to put explosives in him. He's going to eat it, and then it blows up. I thought that was a great idea.
No, I was a little confused too because they said that the weapon was so powerful that it would turn a mountain to ash.
Yeah,
and I'm like, okay, whoa.
Yeah,
but then they start using it, and it's just sort of like,
know what happens? They shoot it into Pulgasari's mouth, and he spits fireballs back at them.
Yeah, it's really good.
And he beats his way through the wall and destroys the guns.
It's
and
so
that's
great.
Awesome.
I think that's the first building, the first castle he crushes, because it's like, it's so cool. Like when he pounds his fist down on it, you see the individual tiles on that roof like bounce and move and fall in the dust, and it's fucking
and
cool.
It's a good like the editing there was pretty cool, where you know we were talking about Pulgasari smashing through the castle, and they're cutting to the interior of the castle where the king is, and they're just cutting back and forth as Pulgasari is smashing his way in to get the king. It's pretty cool.
And the king tries to hide, but Pulgasari knows right where he's hiding.
Mm-hmm.
And stomps him flat.
Yeah. Crushes him.
And smooshed.
There you go, Mike. End of the movie, credits roll.
No, there's a big party because the farmers won. But then we quickly cut back to a sad scene.
Oh.
It's so weird. It's a weird cut because it's like a big party. Yeah. Then it's this quick cut to like Pulgasari looking real bummed because he's real hungry.
Yep.
I love how they give him Lion Gun. He just like takes it in his big paw and just shoves it in his mouth.
Yes, this is where the an interesting twist happens, though, because Amy starts to wonder if they've created an evil god, because now Pulgasari has no one to fight.
He's just hungry. He's got nothing to do but eat.
Well, and she just wonders, I kind of have this written down, saying, but now their savior has become their enemy. To survive, Pulgasari will have to make war upon other countries and eat their iron. But then the whole world would be at war, and this will be the fall of humanity.
Kind of a weird juxtaposition with what's going on right now in the world.
I thought that was an interesting twist, that they created this monster to help them, but then it shows what happens after the battle and you're stuck with the monster that you made.
And you can't just kill Pulgasari. Oh no.
That's some sort of commentary. I don't know what, but
if only Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump would join together to watch this movie and receive the message of peace.
Somebody tweet at Dennis Rodman, see if we can set it up.
If I needed to, I'd crawl inside a big old bell for both of those motherfuckers.
We'll talk about that, Mike. What does crawling in the bell mean?
Well, it's a euphemism.
Is it?
I'm pretty sure it's literal, right?
No, someone else.
So Amy climbs into the bell, the only piece of iron left in the entire city. And she's ringing the bell to get Pulgasari's attention. And she climbs into it right as Pulgasari reaches in. And he crushes it, which I thought right then that would kill Amy.
She's done.
No.
Credits roll.
No. She's still alive inside the bell as Pulgasari puts it into his mouth and chomps down on it.
But does that kill her?
I don't know.
Well, wait, because, okay, maybe?
No, it does not kill her.
He swallows it, and apparently she's dead.
She's not dead.
From there,
she's
I don't
not
know.
Dead yet. She eats it, and then from inside of his body, she talks to him, and that's what freaks him the fuck out.
What? What sense does that make? How could he hear her?
I don't know. He did, though. And maybe it was her ghost or something, but she eats it, he swallows, and then you hear her whisper like, please control your something, something, something. Don't do this or whatever. I didn't write it down, unfortunately.
She but prays for him to be destroyed or leave to Earth, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's when it cuts to the close-up of his face, and it gets all weird and wonky for a second because he's, like, freaked out about it.
Yeah, he looks like he's having an aneurysm.
Yeah.
Doesn't Pulgasari, like, explode or, like,
he turns into stone and explodes.
Yeah. He becomes a ball of light.
No, don't skip over this awesome explosion scene.
Oh, that's the baby Pulgasari that pops up out of the wreckage.
Wow, this ending description's a mess.
We bungled this one.
This is as much of a mess as this fucking ending of the movie.
He turns into rock.
I have no idea what's going on.
The big Pulgasari cracks and explodes.
Paul, what is your interpretation of the ending to Pulgasari?
Oh my god.
No, just keep going. We still got to talk about all the backstory. Keep going.
So the fucking movie's over now. I have no idea what happened. None of us. We all have different. I think we all watched a different movie. That was like 95% the same, but the last 5 minutes was completely different for each of us.
Okay, so anyway, so there's a big pile of rubble because that's where Pulgasari was. He exploded, and then a slow dolly back across the smoking rubble that's his body, and it is fucking cool as hell looking. And then your tummy tickles with glee because you see another little tiny Pulgasari start walking around. Boop, 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 boop.
But why? What? Like, what?
Because then he turns into a beam of light or a little ghost of light and goes into Amy's body and then brings her back to life? Wait.
No. I thought that was going to bring her back to life.
Oh,
geez. She just dies.
Her eyes are closed when it cuts to credit, but I would assume it means she comes back?
I think they wanted to leave enough room for a sequel.
But you could have it if she was still alive.
and if the director didn't like escape North Korea after that.
Well,
he did escape North Korea after this, yes.
Which I guess we should probably get into that because I think Jay and maybe me, well, Jay and I might have another little special episode going more into more detail on this. But
well, if that's the case, then it's already aired.
Yeah, they've already heard this.
All right. Well, then maybe we'll say some shit for the people who don't want to listen to that one.
Yeah, touch it in case someone skips the mini episode teasers.
Jay, Paul, either of you want to talk about it?
What? Just basically the director, Shin Sang-ok. I'm probably not pronouncing that right at all. Was kidnapped. Right. He was at the top of his game in South Korea. He was a big-time filmmaker. He'd won all the awards, knew all the government, everybody, very popular. And he was with his wife. They've made tons of movies together, and they're both kidnapped.
Separately. She was kidnapped like 5 years before him.
Was she?
Yeah, she. Yeah, they got her first. Not they got her first. We don't need to get into details, but yeah, they were both kidnapped. Sorry.
Yeah, they're both kidnapped. And because Kim Jong-il, who was a movie buff, and he was in charge of the cinematic arts in North Korea, wasn't happy with the state of North Korean films and decided, I'm going to go get the guy that can make some good movies for us. So he kidnapped them.
And he made several movies.
I have here, he actually made 17 movies in North Korea.
Oh, wow.
And one documentary. But only five of them have him listed as, he was only credited for five of them because they were released before his escape. And all of the other 12 were released after his escape, or they were still in production.
Oh, that's a bummer because after Pulgasari, after Pulgasari came out and he escaped, Kim Jong-il wiped his name off of the directing credit as well.
Huh.
And when he found out about that, when the director found out that his name had been taken off Pulgasari, he then wrote a remake of it that was made.
What?
Yeah,
it's called
a remake.
It's called Gogamoth, and you guys are going to be lucky if I pick this one because it's streaming somewhere. So guess who might watch that in season 3 of fucking B Movie Mania? Because it looks fucking insane.
What's it called?
The Adventures of Gogamoth.
Gogamoth,
yeah. It looks like it's a kid's fucking movie. So it's right up my alley.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
Rating time.
I think today's rating, we're going to go on a score of 1 to 100 Pulgasarias!
Makes sense. Checks
okay.
out.
Anyone That's want to start us off? Jay?
So, I mean, due to the subtitling, you know, it's not a casual watch. It's you know, as we talked about, the Amazon copy is pretty rough. You know, I think this is a little bit of a deep dive, but it's enjoyable. I had a good time with it. I enjoy how Paul Gasari starts little and gets ginormous. That was cool. Lots of cool stuff happened. It's especially interesting if you do know the backstory behind the film and sort of all the stuff that happened around it. And I'm sure there's lots of stories around this film that will never make it out. I thought it was pretty fun. So I'm going to go 74. Paul Gasari!
All right, Mike.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I really think that overall, just in the general sphere around this movie, which Jay did touch on and we did throughout the whole thing, of just like all the story behind the making of it is fascinating. And it's a real interesting piece of cinema in that it's insanely unique because of what it is and how it was made. Besides that, like, it's pretty entertaining. Whether it's something that seems cool or something that's funny, whether ironically or not, and like a couple other things that are just fascinating. And I just had a real good time with this thing. So I'm going to say fucking 87, Paul Gasari-as.
Wow.
Wow.
All right, Paul, where does your score fit in?
I think Jay and Mike did a pretty good job there summing it up. I don't have much to add to that other than the lulls in the movie, you know, sort of the first half of it could have probably been tightened up a little bit. The runtime was, you know, maybe just a bit too long. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed it. I'm going to go 68. Paul Gasari-as!
All right. Good scores. I think I'm going to land right in the middle, too. I think we're all pretty much in agreement here on this. The movie drags in some points, and I think the story of the making of the movie is way more interesting than the movie itself.
Yeah.
But I think if you're like a kaiju fan, I think you owe it to yourself to watch this.
Cute little guy. Because
it is unique.
Cute little guy.
There's a lot to like about this movie, and a little bit to bring it down a bit, so I'm going to go right in the middle with 70 Pulgasaurias!
Seven?
Seven? Just seven?
Seven. No, 70. 7-0.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think my internet connection's cutting out again or something.
Do you need to sort of redo the end of that, Chris?
What's that? Say that again?
Oh, God. Let's just wrap it up.
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
This is going to be a movie that probably you haven't heard of, but it's one of those situations where I went deep down the Amazon Prime rabbit hole.
No.
And so I'm pretty excited about it. So after I'm done reading the description,
no.
I hope that you guys will pretend to be really excited about it too.
We'll see.
Lainey McCoy begins an affair with a much younger man, only to spin out of control in a jealous rage. Now it's up to her attorney to sort out the details of her disturbing story. It's called Fury Redo, and it's on Amazon Prime. Now be really excited about it.
Oh, whoa, dude. I've heard so much about Fury. Furry? Oh, wow. Oh.
Hey, my internet connection cut out again. I have no idea what movie we're watching.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydie? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out, touch them. They're touching themselves, and they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
Is that the intro?
That's just the intro. I think it's the stinger. Pugasaria!
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 That probably actually will be the stinger.
That's fine.